The CEO Roundtable brings together operations professionals at the top of their game to define and explore what it means to be highly effective in a scale-up organization. And what sits at the heart of it is highly curated peer-to-peer roundtables where COOs talk about things that matter.
I absolutely love my roundtable. We've been together for about 2 years, and without exaggeration, I have made friends for life.
To find out more, go to COOroundtable.com. That's COOroundtable.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Operations Room, a podcast for COOs. I am Brandon Minsinger, joined by my lovely co-host, Bethany Ayers. How are things going, Bethany?
They're going well, Brandon. I got myself into a little bit of trouble this weekend.
Oh, dear.
So my husband occasionally listens to the podcast.
Oh, he's an avid listener. That's great.
I didn't say avid, but, you know, occasional. When the rest of politics runs out and he's doing exercise and the next thing that comes up is us.
He's like, what is Bethany talking about?
And he was listening to a recent episode where I talk about how being married is not part of my identity.
Oh boy. All right.
So I got into like a little bit of trouble. He came downstairs and he's like, so I don't matter, do I?
Yes. The spouse reaction always is to reframe it in the worst possible terms.
Yeah. And I was like, no, it's just not, you know, being married isn't part of my identity. He's like, yeah, I know. And I said, but we've talked about this before. It shouldn't be a surprise. He's like, it's one thing for it not to be a surprise privately. It's another thing to just have it talked about.
With several thousand people. I know. This is like the nature of podcasting, isn't it? Especially the podcasting style that we do. Interestingly, my wife has never listened to an episode ever. I'm not sure if she plans to be honest. I'm not sure why that is exactly, but I've never asked. The interesting part is her sister actually has listened to several episodes, and she consistently is one of my top kind of LinkedIn likers, as it were. So she's very supportive of the podcast, which is great, and I really appreciate it.
I have an uncle in New Mexico, who is an avid listener. And I only know this because every time I phone my aunt, he always jumps on. It's just like, I love the podcast. It's really good. So I'm just going to say, hello, Uncle Byron in Albuquerque. Thanks for being such an avid listener.
So we've got a great topic today, which is a COO's framework to create high-performance companies. We have an amazing guest in this with Simon Wakeman. He is the former COO of TPX Impact, a 500-person digital transformation business, and the author of the B3 Framework, a tool to build highly performant organizations. And that's the topic for today. The first layer, as it were, first layer of the cake, as he called it, the foundation, which is the what and the how. Why do we do what we do? What business are we in? And the how is really the value set of the organization in this case. So on that foundational layer of his framework for COOs, what's your take on that first layer?
Well, first of all, I mean, I shouldn't probably say this, but it's the first thing that came to mind was, although it's the foundation layer, it is visually the tip of the pyramid. So it's kind of like
the inverse
of a foundation layer. But I do agree it's where we should start. Simon Sinek says it, start with why. So it's, why do you exist? What do you do? And how do you do it?
Yeah, I think this part of it, whether it's the foundation, the top, the tip of the iceberg, what have you, I think we're all agreed. This is a core part of every company's structure that they need to have without a shadow of a doubt. So let's park that one because that's a no-brainer. The second layer is what he called making a business. And making a business had two layers to it. One was strategy and one was the operating model. Every company needs to have a strategy that's crisp, that's clear, that's communicated well, that people understand, because that's the precursor to setting good goals and objectives for the company that wrap into that strategy, very clearly manifest that strategy to come alive. I would say this, we did an operating model at Trent, and I found it immensely useful to pinpoint to the rest of the organization, in particular leadership and management, where we were having challenges that we needed to solve. I think we mishmashed several things together, a bit of high level, how we create value in the business, and a bit of lower level, go-to-market motion-y type stuff to try to pinpoint where I thought we were having challenges with executing the strategy and then illustrating it visually in an operating model back to the company to help them understand where we were having these issues, essentially. So I think there is value in this idea of operating model, how you represent it, what it needs to look like, and at what level it is. I think maybe depends on the context in which you're using it.
Yeah, I think I just don't understand fundamentally the definition of an operating model. If we all actually knew what an operating model was, there would be clarity and examples, and the examples would be consistent in the same way that like a go-to-market strategy has a pretty consistent understanding and definition now.
What I do know is that there's a way of representing processes in the company to help the company understand where you have challenges. Layer number three, building the organization. And he had four layers here. He had roles and responsibilities. He had structure. Third one was decision-making. And the fourth one was governance. So building the organization layer, what's your take on that one?
Decision-making, that's the really interesting one. And I think that's the hardest. The structure of the business keeps changing. The roles and responsibilities will keep changing. But we all know how to do that. And it's as you get bigger, you need to keep rethinking it. But it's fairly well understood. How do you do decision-making? How do you codify it? How do you decide who can make what is really hard? How do you delegate decision-making responsibility? And how do you deal with a CEO who wants to make all the decisions because it's their baby? And so I think that one is super critical and really hard to do.
In this building the organization section, I had two additional thoughts of things that are interesting to me that I think are part of the CEO role in a scale-up company. And I'm curious what you think, Bethany. One is this idea of making good investment bets in the organization with a forecast that can drive some calculated risks and decision-making. And in my view, finance at this level typically is wonderful at creating models. They're wonderful at thinking through how those models are interconnected. What they're not good at is making a lot of the assumptions in the model itself around the go-to-market motion and how revenue is created, why it's created, when it's created, who's creating it, what the budgets are as part of that package, and really having a holistic thinker thinking about all of that with the finance person to ensure that we're crafting the right kind of forecast model, because ultimately the cash burn of the business and also what you're committing to both for the board and the CEO and what the leadership team is accountable for in terms of their expectations. Somebody needs to manage that in totality. And I think to build the organization at that level, it feels like this is one of the key bullet points. That being said, I'm curious what you think.
Like, what is your business model and your actual model that you're working with? It's interesting what you say about it being the COO's role. I would think it's mostly the CFO's, but yet in every business I've been in, I've been very involved in that part. So maybe it is, you know, it's a slightly different way of thinking than CFOs tend to have.
I mean, you have a really good point here, because in scale-up organizations, I have worked at all levels except I've not worked with the CFO. So you're right. I think at some point, I would assume or imagine the CFO would definitely take this role if you hired a CFO at that level.
Although like a CFO still doesn't necessarily have all of the go-to-market experience. And like I've worked with CFOs to build the model, agree the assumptions, and I really owned the go-to-market. And therefore, I knew the assumptions and why I was choosing the ones that I was. So very much partnering, but leaving it to the CFO and FP&A to run with the actual work and to like project manage it.
I see. Okay. Interesting. The other box that I think is missing, strong use of data within the organization. I'm really thinking about reporting and KPIs and metrics and making sure this is all very fluid in the business.
So data is one of those things that every size business now really needs to think through. And it's very important. Who owns it? What are the data models? What is the data security? If you don't have the nice foundations, suddenly you just have nothing that you can report on that anybody believes in, and you become a non-data-driven business from the start.
I think there's a whole topic around this, which is when you have a CRM in your business and you have your so-called source of truth, and separately, you have a data team with a BI tool of some nature, whether it's Looker or whatever else, what ends up happening is you end up with different numbers, and it's the worst possible situation you can be in, where the CRM is saying the number is X, and then your BI team and your charts are saying that the number is Y.
I still see in like seed and Series A companies with small amounts of data. Because it's small, they don't really take it seriously. And then as you grow, you don't have that data mined and everybody's like, oh, well, those numbers are wrong. So we're just not going to use those numbers, rather than like, okay, well, for the next quarter, we're going to get everything in line. So those numbers are right. And we're going to make decisions based on those numbers. They may be directional. They may not be the truth, but at least there's something that we can use rather than just disregarding it entirely.
Yeah, completely. Layer number four is called operating the business. We have cadence and communications. We've got change leadership. We've got performance. We've got processes. We have systems and we have standards. So there's quite a bit there. Cadence and comms, leadership, performance, processes, systems, and standards. So with that bucket, what do you make of that?
So is systems where the data lies and actually it wasn't missing?
Yes, maybe you're right here.
And then cadences are really important. And that's also where the data gets distributed and the information gets distributed. Performance is an interesting one, like, because performance is one where when you're an employee, you're being graded for what reason, lots of box ticking, none of it makes sense, don't feel supported, generally a really bad experience. And so then when I became a manager and the leader, I was like, who cares about performance? And there was like generally, I think, a lot of that feeling in senior management, because we all remember what it's like being on the other side. And we're like, well, that didn't do anything. This is actually something I wonder. It's like, we think as leaders, no, but you can do performance well and performance really matters. But I would love to talk to ICs and businesses that think they're doing performance well and find out whether or not they really are.
So let's move on to our conversation with Simon Wakeman. What are the four layers of your framework and why those particular four layers in this case?
We start with fundamental basics. The real things that you have to be able to build a company from. So in there, we talk about things like values of businesses, mission, all of those kind of fundamentals. The next layer is about making the business. So that's really about the strategy and the operating model for the business. Then we go into building the organization. So that's kind of taking it to another level of detail, the things you need to actually build an organization out that can scale. And then the final layer, the bottom of the pyramid, is operating the business. So all of the things you need to do on a day-to-day basis to have a coherent, functioning business that scales.
So the first question that came out for me when I was reading this is the operating model. So I'd love if you can explain to me what an operating model is that is not your entire framework.
Operating model is one of those nebulous things that lots of people talk about and no one really knows exactly what they mean. So my view on it is it's the blueprint about how you fit together a set of activities that you're likely to be doing in your business to create value. So it's really, if you think about, you've got a company that's got a mission or a vision, you've developed a strategy, said, here's the things we're going to do, here's the things we're not going to go and do. Then the question goes, how are we going to do those things? And the blueprint is a high-level summary of how you might do that. Sometimes it's confused with structure, but it's not just about structure. It's about how you chain together all of the things to create the value. I mean, back in 10 years ago, you might have looked at a value chain or something like that and considered that was a way of representing it. I don't think there's a single right or wrong way of showing an operating model. But for me, it's, can you draw on a page something that explains how this business creates value? And if you can, you've probably got an operating model to work with.
Is that not just a business model? Sorry, I'm just going to keep going here till I understand what an operating model is, because I'm still none the wiser.
Yeah. So for me, the operating model really is about how are you going to turn strategy, a set of choices, into a reality about something. You could call it a business model, but for me, the business model has a lot more financial components in it. So the business model says, can we do this profitably? The operating model is purely how are we going to turn this idea, this set of choices, into something that functions as a business. So how are we going to source customers? How are we going to deliver? How might we partner with other people? And when you start out, it's a set of assumptions, but over time you have to build and refine those assumptions because they then inform how you structure. They might inform how you market. They might inform how you contract with partners. They inform lots of other things that follow on in the model. What are the high level things that you chain together to create value? And you're right, in most businesses, ultimately, we have to find customers. We have to produce or deliver something to them of value, and we have to get them to pay us. At a really, really high level, that's what's going on. So you could almost use that as the highest level in your operating model, but then obviously you've got to get a bit more specific for the type of business you're creating. Some businesses spend more time in this zone than others. I mean, for example, service businesses, so the kind of businesses I worked in for a good few years, the operating model really goes into a lot about how you might deliver the service. So ultimately, whether you're employing groups of consultants, whether you're subcontracting the work, whether you're partnering. So all of those kind of how questions are what I think you should set out in the operating model, because then it informs a load of the things that you do later on, like structure, like governance, like decision making.
So do you have an operating model template as part of the framework?
So in the framework, I link to a number of different templates because I don't think there's a single one. Part of my belief about the framework is there is no single way that you should do things in business. There's a set of things that you have to do to link together for it to be coherent, and that's why I created the framework. But ultimately, the way to represent your operating model will differ depending on the kind of business you're in. My steer for people that are in scaling businesses is look for, can you create it on a page? Because you can look for operating models and you can find 100-page PowerPoint decks and all of that kind of stuff. That for me is unnecessary levels of thinking, necessary levels of depth. What you're really looking for is something that describes overall, how is this business creating value on a page?
Do you have a case study or like an actual example, a real life example to help us move from the abstract to the tangible on this one?
Let's talk about a service business. So the digital agency I ran, we had lots of choices about how we delivered technology. So let's think about the value chain in an agency is you piece together a team of people with a set of skills to answer a problem for a client and build something. So I use that as the basic frame for an agency. To do that, we had one of the challenges in a tech business was about resourcing the tech parts of building products for clients. We had choices in doing that. We had choices about, do we build in-house teams? Do we outsource to UK-based? Do we nearshore the work? Do we run distributed? And this is back in sort of pre-pandemic days. So there was a very deliberate choice about, do we create a distributed team? Do we create a team centralized in Southeast England where the company was based? So all of those choices were choices we looked at when we developed this operating model on a page. And they then informed what we then did in terms of recruitment strategy, in terms of structure, in terms of looking at acquisition of a business to give us the opportunity to have greater bandwidth in our technology delivery, for example. So if we hadn't done that thinking, we wouldn't have been clear about the way we were going to deliver.
What's a strategy then?
So strategy is less about the how for me, and a strategy is much more early stage decisions about things you're not going to do as a business. So we are not going to be a service business, we're going to be a product business, but a very basic example. It's the things that you choose to exclude, having analyzed the market, the external factors. So strategy for me is the what, operating model is the how. Now you could, yeah, lots of people will link them together and call them the same thing, but because strategy is another nebulous term that everyone defines differently, I chose to pull them apart in the model because I wanted to say that they are different things ultimately.
If we move on to layer three, building the organization, there is one phrase that kind of caught my eye a little bit, which is minimum viable governance. And a bit of a similar question, I think, which is, what does that mean in practice? Part of the definition here was a minimum set of rules, policies, and risk management processes needed to ensure that the company functions coherently. So can you give us a bit of a sense on what this is? And maybe the second question is just an example of it that you've actually implemented in practice to make it come alive.
Minimum viable governance really starts with a base layer of what do we have to do to govern this organization legally? What are the duties of a director? The minimum viable bit really is about what are the convening forums? Do you end up with a leadership team meeting? Do you end up with very decision-making distributed across the organization and then you need to work on communication? But what's the minimum set of things you can do to make sure that as a founder or an exec team member, you've got confidence that the business is moving coherently in the right direction? So typically it's how do you share information? You've got the mix of synchronous and asynchronous forums. It's what are the cadences that you put into an organization so that people either are reporting, sharing, challenging, holding to account. There's different ways you can do it depending on the type of organization you're trying to create. But what minimum viable governance says is do the minimum that you need to. Because if you take it the other way and you don't go minimum viable, then governance becomes this sort of creeping tentacle into the organization that starts to stifle what it needs, the agility, the dynamism it needs to actually be able to scale. So getting that balance right for me is the really important thing. And getting the right balance for the right stage of growth as well. That changes pretty quickly, particularly in those early days of scaling.
I've seen businesses put in too much process. I'm just using process rather than governance too soon, because I feel like they need to be a grown-up company, and it just stifles innovation. It slows everybody down. So I don't know if you've read the Netflix book, but that's basically what Reid Hoffman talks about in the beginning. It's the first business he built. He put in way too much process because every time there was a problem, they went back and solved it. And he did not want that the second time round. And so then a Netflix is kind of the opposite. In theory, there are no rules. It's the book's called No Rules Rules, but there are loads of rules, but they're just slightly different. And there's more of an emphasis on people using their brains and making good decisions than having process control it. So I think I'm a big fan of the book. I think we're all on the same page when it comes to governance. And I would say it's governance and process rather than just governance alone.
I think as people who've worked for many years, we've worked for, we're conditioned to think about organizations where power is centralized at the top and decisions rise up. And that is fundamentally wrong in my view. And so everything we need to be doing is about actually how do we push autonomy, decision-making, rights, responsibility out into organizations. But you need some appropriate safeguards, boundaries, whatever you want to call them, to allow that to happen and make sure that it's matched with competency to deal with that autonomy. So fundamentally, that's what you should be doing with governance. The governance should be providing some of the safety ropes for that, but giving people the opportunity to really be autonomous in their roles.
You know, it's interesting. Just the word governance makes me think of two things in scale-ups pretty specifically, actually. One is purely ISO kind of SOC 2 compliance and the ticking of many, many boxes to achieve that and maintain that. So like a risk register as an example, whereby leadership has to be exposed to that risk register on some cadence or basis and so on. You know, literally going into that meeting, most leaders turn off their brains and the person presents for 5 minutes, they leave and we've ticked a box essentially. And not that that's, you know, necessarily the right thing to do, but that's the reality of what ends up happening in these companies.
Not in my companies. I'm there with my brain switched on. I'll just have you say it's not everyone, Brandon. I think you're exposing yourself here.
Exactly. But I guess to the primary point of like you're creating value in a business and managing risk is part of that process. But what you're trying to do as little as humanly possible, i.e. minimum viable, to allow you to create value and to innovate and do the fun stuff, essentially. The other thing that occurs to me as we're speaking is whatever you want to call it, crisis communications, when the server goes down if you're a SaaS company in particular, the server goes down, the software goes offline, there's some problem happening, your ability to deal with that crisis very fast, very effectively, that requires very healthy governance to ensure that reaction on the part of the company takes place.
Preparedness is a really good example. So I think it goes back to that minimum viable bit. And the risk register really is a tool to say, actually, how much effort should we put into all of these risks? Because some of them, they could be big risks, or they could be very low likelihood, but high significance, but your options for mitigation are pretty limited. So actually, maybe you don't put a lot of time into them, but some of them, maybe you do. So, and the risk register for me is it's a leadership tool.
So I think that what's important is not to have it be an exec level discussion tool, because most of the execs just don't care. And so what you need to do is find the ones who do, plus the other people in the business who do, who get excited about like preparing for the unknown and writing out things that may or may not ever be used, and then just briefing the rest of the exec that this happens. So I've been in exec meetings where it's the whole risk register and CEOs who just couldn't care less. And so they do a couple, then they get distracted, like Bugs Bunny might be talked about for a bit, and then that's the risk register done. Versus a subset of me, because my brain works that way and I'm clearly a catastrophizer, and the CIO, CTO, you know, those other kinds of structured thinkers, maybe a lawyer. And we can spend half a day on a risk register and do a lot of critical thinking in the future and then just let everybody else know who doesn't care at all that we have it in hand. And so I would suggest businesses choosing the right people to be engaged, and then informing the ones who just don't care at all about what they need to know about, rather than trying to get them involved.
My experience is that it's the COO role or the ops director role that is the convener in that, because they are the people who think through all of the different options or different things that could happen. So yeah, in my experience, he or she is the person that takes that away and convenes that group, does the hard work, basically.
That's a real important point to make, because ultimately in these businesses, the logical thinkers around structure and process, in particular when it comes to things like security, this is the CTO, the CIO, really on the engineering side of things. And they can be tremendous partners to carry a big portion of that load as the operator of the business, because ultimately the buck stops with the CEO in terms of the risk of the organization and making sure that you're mitigating risk appropriately. But those partners that you have on the engineering side can be a tremendous relationship to make it happen.
Going back to the framework, Simon, is any of this in the framework, or have we just gone on a complete tangent on like other boring things that we talk about as COOs?
Standards are definitely in the framework, because really what I'm trying to do with the framework and standards is say to people, you've got to, one, a level of awareness of your mandatory standards, your legal standards, because for some startups in the early stages, they just don't have that understanding. But particularly, how can you use standards as a tool to build organizations that are coherent and stable? But it is, standards are just another tool you can put in place. But again, it's doing them for the right reason, not doing them because everyone else does them or because we did them somewhere else.
So then maybe the flip side of the coin in operating the business is the systems box. Can you maybe just unpack this a little bit in terms of the CEO responsibility for the systems box?
This one does relate very strongly to ownership of technology in the business. I'm talking here about technology that underpins the business rather than any technology the business may develop for its product. But thinking about where systems ownership sits, who owns things like systems architecture, which as you end up with greater technology focused roles, then clearly there's a role there. But businesses that come out and into the scaling phase, the early scaling phase, and haven't done that thinking often end up with quite a messy systems architecture, particularly if you've got uncontrolled adoption of SaaS, you've got people, things running on people's credit cards all over the place, which at one stage is absolutely what you want, because you want people trialing and doing things. But at some point, the cash burn of that becomes ridiculous. If you start scaling it, you end up with inconsistent data, and data is one of the real problems of that architecture. And you've got to start taking view about what's the right system or systems architecture, portfolio of systems that we need. How do we integrate as we scale? The bit I've seen be most challenging that actually is about data and holding data, consistency of data. And particularly as we think to the roles of AI and augmenting businesses to be more efficient and more effective and taking opportunities, if we don't have underlying data that is high quality, that's been thought about, that we understand how data flows between systems, then we have a real problem. So that for me is the hidden gremlin of the systems box. It's what systems do we want, how are we going to integrate them, and what's the data model that underpins this business?
So this is a topic that we've covered a bit in the beginning on who owns ops, rev ops, biz ops, people ops, et cetera. Should it sit? Is it federated or is it centralized? And we've definitely had people argue for both. I'm interested in your take, Simon.
The short answer, of course, is it depends. My instinct is for it to be more devolved, because I think that fits with my principles about greater autonomy for people. But I think you need that kind of governing framework, that whether you want to call it an operating model, you need something that allows people to understand the overall shape of the organization, how it's going to create value. And then they can understand how to exercise autonomy in a more federated model within that. So I would push stuff out, but I think you do need someone looking over those things that are being done in different parts of the business to say, is this going in a coherent direction? Because as you start scaling, any of those little fractures that are there when you're relatively small become pretty big fractures pretty quickly, and then they become much harder to deal with. So I would probably bias towards a more decentralized approach.
Where do you think BI sits? So if you're sitting there with Looker and Snowflake and a bunch of data that's coming from all sorts of systems within your company, who owns that, do you think?
I would probably put greater ownership with the tech leadership in terms of providing, but I think the COO probably has a responsibility around defining the user needs, essentially, or bringing together the user needs. What data do we need to see to run this business? Because if you provided a capability to pull lots of data, lots of dashboards, lots of intelligence out, who's actually going to use it and where? And I think that's where the interface of technology in the business comes in. And we talk about in the framework, for people to take decisions, they have to have quality information. And you might have the infrastructure to provide quality information, but it's not being used in the right forums by the right people to take the right decisions. That's when you end up with challenges.
I'd also argue that possibly sits with finance, depending on how mature your finance team is, whether or not finance is responsible for all the reporting within the business. And then it depends on if finance is rolling up to ops. But at least in my experience, a good finance professional is the best at displaying data and explaining why it matters. Otherwise, everybody's just looking at numbers and coming to their own conclusions or not understanding numbers in the first place. And also just wanted to say for our listeners, when Simon, you were talking about the proliferation of SaaS tools, we have an episode, it's episode 11, that specifically covers why licensing 170 SaaS tools is a good idea or not. Another thing that caught my eye in the framework was, I can't remember if you called it cadences or not, but basically, and for me, I always think of that as part of the operating model, but I guess it's maybe the operating rhythm. If we go full circle to the start of this, any hints around what meetings to set up? I was at a golf event last night. One of the people I was speaking with was like, I hate recurring meetings more than anything. And I try and get them all out of my diary as quickly as possible. And yet these are basically the recurring meetings of your business. I'd love to hear some best practice around there.
So why have a cadence in an organization? It's the drumbeat of the organization is the phrase I use a lot. It's about what can you do so that everyone is working on the same drumbeat. You've got a marching band and everyone is in step rather than everyone's in slightly different step in slightly different directions. And so that's what we're trying to do. It does sometimes take the form of recurring meetings, and the frequency of those meetings and the purpose of those meetings needs to be thought about very deliberately. There's something about particularly distributed businesses, the function of cadence in binding people together so that they feel more part of something, a single mission, a single organization. But it doesn't have to be meetings necessarily. There can be other convening forum. I mean, asynchronous check-ins and that kind of thing can be useful to an extent in fulfilling some of those points of alignment. But I think it's being very deliberate. Yeah, why are we having this stand-up? Why do we have a daily stand-up? Why do we have a company kick off the week meeting at whatever time on a Monday morning? What's the purpose of those meetings? And then regularly reviewing them, saying, are they still meeting those purposes? Because I've got one business I worked with where they were meeting every Monday morning at 9 o'clock for half an hour. They were really giving me deep dive into what the week ahead looked like, what the priorities were, what the pitfalls might be. When they were triple the size, that was a really inefficient way of achieving that goal. And so they had to look again. But they recognized that that kind of starting the week thing is something that was actually embedded very strongly in the company's culture. But the way they were doing it wasn't something they wanted, it wasn't something that was right to continue in that form. So I think the lesson is about being very deliberate in you must have a drumbeat, but the drumbeat needs to change over time and think very carefully about use of time, use of tools to do that.
I think that's an important part, a point is quite often we build something, we click up, we like off the list, off the to-do list, it's fine. And then you forget that you actually, like, just because this was the appropriate drumbeat a year ago or even a quarter ago, doesn't mean that it's appropriate now that you're 30%, 100% bigger than you were previously. And how do you need to adjust things? Simon, we're rapidly running out of time. And before we go, we've covered so much today. If our listeners could only take one thing away from our conversation, what would that one thing be?
I think the one thing I would say is think about the business you're building as a system of interconnected parts. Understand the linkages between all those parts and be very deliberate about the choices you make in those parts. And that's what I was trying to do the framework is say, there are lots of parts, they're all linked together. You can create those parts to be exactly what you need for your business, but understand how they link together and understand how changing one of them affects something else in your business. And the coherence of your business depends on getting the balance of all those elements right. So your business is a system and tend for it, care for it, and keep iterating it as it grows.
Love it. So on that note, Simon, thank you for joining us on the Operations Room. If you like what you hear, please leave us a comment or subscribe, and we'll see you next week.